You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 1st of March 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. I'm afraid we're not actually live tonight. This is pre-recorded, but at least we have managed to get a show together for you. And it's going to be another interesting one, looking at Vatican intrigues with the National Socialists and with the Fascists. And of course, because we're going to be talking about that, we have with us tonight the producer of Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing? Is your tooth better? Are you feeling better?
I'm feeling better. Well, I've just dropped my headphones in a bucket of water, so we won't even go there, Sven.
Am I sounding okay to you? Am I going blub, 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 blub?
Not like I thought it would be.
Okay. Well, as I say, we've got some interesting stuff to get into tonight. But before we get into that, how is part 19 coming on with the documentary?
Part 19 is one of them parts where the more you research, the more confusion it gets. So it's one of these, you just got to battle through it till everything makes sense. But at the moment, you know, I think it's going all right. I was hoping to have more done, but like I said, it's one of them where, you know, it can get confusing and it's not easy to put it all in a 15-minute video. But we've been down this road before. So no doubt we'll get an answer.
Can you give us a brief outline yet of what the subjects are going to be that you're going to cover in it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've been one for a long time now to be waving the flag of Christianity was the religion of Germany. There's a lot of people out there who don't believe it. I mean, don't get me wrong, there was some paganism in National Socialism for sure. But even, I think it was Goebbels, banned the occult in 1941, believe it or not. And so I'm going down that road. Himmler's another one who's been accused of being an occultist. I've got some good stuff on him. So, I mean, the main thing is that the National Socialists also thought Jesus, like I don't think he was, they didn't think Jesus was a Jew. I'm going into the reasons why they didn't think that.
Yes, I mean, their reasoning is slightly different to mine. Of course, you know, I've always thought Jesus was an Aryan. I mean, really, when you look at the pictures, the reconstructions that the churches always had of Jesus and the disciples, none of them are Jews. They're all Aryans, as far back as you care to go. They're all pictures of, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, golden beards, and just not Jews. Yeah. The only Jew that ever appears is Judas Iscariot, who is always depicted as a Jew. And that's what the name means.
But a lot of people, when you say it, I mean, I've said it to a couple of people close to me, and they do go back in shock when you know, you're sure? I truly believe he wasn't a Jew. And, you know, the more you look into it, the more it obviously wasn't. And words have been changed in the Bible. Got proof of that. So hopefully, you know, I'll be a lot nearer next week.
Well, it gets quite technical, doesn't it, really? I mean, people think that Jew back then means the same as the word Jew means today. And that's totally different for a start. And then you can get technical and you can say, well, you're actually talking about Israelites, the House of Israel, which was 10 tribes. And then you've got the House of Judah, which was Judah and Benjamin. And the 10 tribes were never Jews. They were never Judeans. They were never the tribe of Judah. They were the 10 tribes, northern house of Israel. And people today just call them all Jews. So that gets complicated. And I think, I mean, you may correct me on this, but I think the reasoning that the National Socialists had was Jesus' actions were not Jewish. Therefore, he was Aryan. He could not have been a Jew because he drove the money lenders out of the temple. He called them devils. And that was their reasoning.
That was exactly what Hitler thought, yeah. But like I said, in National Socialist Party, there were some pretty powerful people who were anti-Christian, but they never really got to grips with that. They were always stopped at some stage of a legislation, what they were going to push through. So you got to look at the overall, end of it all. You know, they were Christian and they had Christian moralities and Christian actions, like I said.
Well, even the small percentage, and it was a very small percentage, that were pagan and anti-Christian, none of them ever said that Jesus was a Jew. They all called Jesus an Arian, but some of them weren't happy with Christianity. But they certainly never would have said anything like that, because that's just insulting to all the German Christians. And insulting.
I think it was Himmler who said that. He won't allow any insults of Christ, and to call him a Jew is historically wrong. So that's the road we're going there.
No, it's ethnically wrong as well, when you think about it. You think Jew just meant a citizen of Judea. It could be any ethnicity whatsoever, because at the time they had proselytes of the gate and proselytes of justice, which meant anybody could travel to Judea and become a Jew. And the Jews were proselytizing. They were trying to get people to become Jews. So it wasn't an ethnic term at the time. And Jesus, in the Bible, it has all his genealogy there, it has all his family tree there. And the reason it has his family tree there is to say he is a pure breed. He is of noble birth. He is not a Jew or just a Jew, which meant somebody that was a citizen of Judea, could be any ethnicity. He was of the house of David. So therefore, he was a pedigree. Pure breed. He had a pedigree there. Strictly speaking, he was a Judahite, because he was from the tribe of Judah.
Of Judah, yeah.
I mean, some people...
Like I said, it can get quite complicated. It doesn't help when you could be a Jew either by religion or by ethnicity, but, end of day, the Jew wasn't even around in them. The word Jew wasn't even around anyway.
No, I think they had three different versions. They had Judahite, Judean, Judaos, something like that. Basically, they had a word which meant from the tribe of Judah. They had another word that meant following the religion, and another word that meant a citizen of Judea. And today, all three of those words get conflated to just be Jew. And even the words Israelite in the Old Testament now, they conflate that just to mean Jew. And they just wiped out the other 95% of the tribes of Israel that were in the Old Testament.
Yeah, most Nebuchadnezzars.
Yeah, well, it's a big scam. Anyway, yeah.
Well, I think Netanyahu isn't even I don't think he's an atheist. So...
Well, that's the thing people have got to think about, isn't it? People that say that Jew is a religion. Well, what about all these atheist Jews? Well, they even use that excuse for communism. We know that communism is Jewish. It was 90% of all the people in charge of communism were Jewish. And the Jews today say, oh, yes, but they weren't Jewish because they had rejected Judaism. A lot of them were atheists, but they were ethnically Jewish. And they instituted laws against the Gentiles, and they spoke Yiddish, and they destroyed all the churches and protected all the synagogues, and they carried out what it says in the Talmud, which is that the Jews will rule over the Gentiles. So regardless of the fact of whether they claimed to be religious or not, they acted like Jews, and they were pure Jews by birth. I mean, they say if your mother is Jewish, you're a Jew, and by those standards, all those communists were Jewish. So it's regardless.
Yeah, that's religion. I think it's confusing by numbers in it. I mean, they do it on purpose.
Yeah, it's a big scam, and it benefits them, of course, because then they can claim to be people that gave us Jesus Christ, and they can claim to be the Israelites, and they can claim Moses, and really, it just,
all, don't they, really?
Yeah, but it just slanders all those characters, and this is the one thing that a lot of people don't know. Is that the Talmud? Some people know that the Talmud slanders Jesus Christ and it slanders Mary, but most people don't know that it also slanders Noah. It says that Noah was a eunuch. Noah cut his own genitals off, and his son, and he was a drunkard as well. And his son Ham, he had sex with all the animals on the ark, and Adam, the father of the white man, he had sex with all the animals in the garden. And the prophet Isaiah, the Jews sawed him in half for speaking badly about Israel. And that's just some of the slanders, pornographic slanders that are in the Talmud. So it's quite clear they are actually against all these Old Testament characters. And people will say today that they will try and use...
Including Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, obviously, and Jesus. But people today will try and include verses from Isaiah and say, oh, well, this is what the Jews are doing. But in the Jews' own Talmud, it says they sawed the prophet Isaiah in half because they didn't like what he was saying. So
wonderful.
Quite clearly, Isaiah was speaking against them. He wasn't speaking for them.
And that is Judaism, by the way. Talmudism. That is Judaism.
Oh, completely. And of course, that didn't exist in the Old Testament. You didn't have rabbinic Judaism. That didn't come about until the 5th or the 6th century. They wrote the Talmud. When they wrote the Talmud down was in the 5th century. And then you got this rabbinic Judaism, which is what Judaism is today. The religion of the Old Testament was the Hebrew religion of the Israelites, and it was centered around Solomon's temple and the priests and the sacrifices. And by the time we get to Christ, it's no longer Solomon's temple. It's Herod's temple. He's turned it into a pagan temple. So this is why, you know, Jesus certainly wasn't worshipping in Herod's temple and worshipping the pagan gods of Herod and the Romans. He was against all that and called the Jews devils. Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the other thing. People don't realize
some doubt about them being captive in Babylon. I'm not convinced about that now.
Well, the Jews themselves being captive in Babylon?
Yeah.
Well, the tribe of Judah wasn't really there for that long. And the tribe of Judah wasn't, I don't think they were treated that badly when they were in Babylon. You've got, Daniel was treated very well and the prophecies of Daniel. And if you read in the Apocrypha, it tells you that they had money. They were able to carry about their normal lives. They weren't slaves. They weren't slaves, basically. It wasn't that bad for them. And that's why 90% of them stayed there in Babylon. Only 10% of the tribe of Judah actually came back to what was formerly the land of Judah. And a large portion of them had married strange women. And they had bastards. And they had mixed-race bastards, mixed-race wives. And the high priest went absolutely mental. It tells you he was tearing out his hair and he went absolutely wild. And he said, you've got to kick all these women out, kick all these bastards out. We can't have them in our country. Mm-hmm. We can't have this race mixing. And they did sort things out and they rebuilt the temple. And it was Zerubbabel's temple. But within about 200 years, they'd fallen again. And they were interbreeding again. And they went and had a war with the neighbouring Edomites, who were Canaanites. And when
they were talking to Jews.
Yeah. And when they had them at the point of the sword, they said, you can either accept death or you can join us and we'll all be called Jews together. And the Edomites said, we'll join you. And they interbred. And that's where your Jew comes from. That's where the Jewish nose comes from. Because that nose goes back to the daughters of Heth.
Physical,
daughters of Heth.
But also, didn't God say that they should be destroyed completely, wiped out?
Well, yeah. In the Old Testament, the command was that they were to, the Israelites were to exterminate completely the Canaanites. They were not to leave them alive. Yeah. And they did in some areas, and they were blessed for it, and they had a huge empire. But then in other areas, they thought, well, we'll just make a few treaties with them and we'll just use them as servants. And they didn't do what they were told to do. And then God got very angry at that and said, well, because of this, they will be a thorn in your side and there'll be pricks in your eyes. And because of them, you know, there will be strife and war and you'll have to learn the arts of war to defeat them. And we've gone past that now. You know, people might say now, oh, yes, well, does that mean we should go and exterminate the Jews? No, it doesn't. Not at all. That was thousands of years ago. And we didn't do what we were told to do. It's gone way past that now. Now they fulfill a role of tempter and punisher. And we have to reject the temptations that they put before us. And they fulfill a role of...
And all they put some temptations there.
Yeah, well, they show us what our weak points are, basically.
Yeah, well, that's what they go for all the time, isn't it? Bribers and you know, film these politicians doing things that one wouldn't expect them to, and then, you know, that's them in charge.
But that's the reason why we have them today, and it's quite and you can see, because of what they're doing today, you can see quite clearly why God said, well, look, we've got to get rid of them. And they were mixed race. They were mixed race. That was the problem right from the start. And it tells you that in the first, I think, chapter 10 or chapter 11 of Genesis. Chapter 10 tells you all the peoples that were descended from Noah, which were descended from Adam. And then suddenly you've got these other, races there, Kenites, Rephaim, I think Anakim, something like that. And the Kenites, the word itself means descended from Cain. So
yeah.
Cain's descendants obviously lived on past the flood, and they were interbreeding with the Canaanites. So you've got this mixed race.
How do they stick with racial laws today then?
So how does it fit with racial laws today?
Not it's funny how they stick with racial laws today, because they don't like a Jew not marrying another Jew, do they?
Well, that's all a cover story, isn't it? Because they're the most mixed race people on the planet. I mean, that's a cover story. That's all that is, because if you look at their DNA, they go back to Turks, they go back to Khazars, they go back to Canaanites, and you've got black Jews, you've got Chinese Jews, you've got European Jews. What it seems to be is that they'll move into a country and they will then marry the aristocracy of that country, ruin the aristocracy, and then they'll say, oh, well, you know, we don't want to marry out. Maybe part of it is to keep their wealth to themselves.
Yeah, because interbreed,
Yeah, because if you marry out, then the wealth is going to dissipate. Yeah. And through the years, they've managed to sort of keep hold of all the gold.
Fascinating subject, monopolize it. It is complicated.
Well, it's a very, very politically incorrect subject. It's a very taboo subject, isn't it? That's why people don't discuss it, but it is fascinating, especially the religious side of it. Anyway,
truly, yeah.
Let's get into what we've got planned for tonight. Anyway, that was all sort of rather on the spur of the moment there. We're going to be talking about the Vatican policy in the Second World War. And this, again, comes from this character, Lehman, who was writing against the Catholic Church. And he appears to have been a Jew that was a Catholic that then converted to Protestantism. And he wrote these books.
Yeah, so he was Irish, I think.
Yeah, he claimed to be Irish, but there's no actual background to him, just that he was in Ireland. Mm. Doesn't tell you what his parents were doing in Ireland, but he claims to be Ireland. But Lehman is a funny name for an Irishman.
Yeah, it does sound that way, inclined, doesn't it?
Yeah. And this is his second book, because we dealt with his first one, in the last three episodes we did, he called it The Church Behind the Dictators, and we called it The Church Behind Fascism. So this is continuing from there, and he outlines the reason why the church is opposed to liberalism. And he says, in the many papal encyclicals against Freemasonry in the 18th and 19th centuries, summed up in the encyclical Humanitum Genus of Pope Leo XIII in 1886, in which he condemned Freemasons because they favoured the following views. They teach that all men have the same rights, and are perfectly equal in condition, that every man is naturally free, that no one has a right to command others, that it is tyranny to keep men subject to any other authority than that which emanates from themselves. Hence, they hold that the people are sovereign, that those who rule have no authority, but by the commission and concession of the people. Thus, the origin of all rights and civil duties is in the people or in the state, which is ruled according to the new principles of liberty. They hold that the state must not be united to religion, that there is no reason why one religion ought to be preferred to another, and that all must be held in the same esteem. This is a plain statement and condemnation of all so-called democratic freedoms. And we can see why so many of these are wrong. You can't say, well, there's no reason why one religion ought to be preferred to another, because there's only one truth. That's like saying, well, there's no reason why the truth should be preferred to a lie. It's all the same. There is no one truth.
Yeah.
And saying the origin of rights and civil duties is in the people rather than in tradition and in religion. If your rights come from man, then man can take them away again. If your rights come from God, then anybody that doesn't respect them, it can be punished for it. And they can't be taken away from them.
At least they come from God. Yeah, they're just there, aren't they?
Yeah, well, what they've done is they've said, well, God doesn't give us these. We give them to you. And if we give them to you, we can take them away. Which people weren't really thinking about.
What's the word I'm looking for? It's gone. Carry on, sorry.
Well, they're also saying that because they're saying everybody is equal in condition, that's a nonsense. There's a hierarchy of races. There's a hierarchy of races, and there's a hierarchy of classes or castes within each race. And the easier scientific way to prove that is through IQ. And IQ is heritable. So yeah, that proves that there are all men are not equal and all races are not equal. Just the same as individuals are different, the races are different. So this is what Freemasonry was promoting, and it's exactly the same as democracy. That's the point.
Yeah. And democracy is not good for those people who think it is.
Yeah, so when the Vatican was going against Freemasons, it meant that it was against democracy. Which obviously is so
different. He said that in Hitler's Pope, didn't he? When asked that question, he said that he felt that the Vatican looked on it as democracy is one step away from socialism, and socialism is half a step away from communism.
It is. Continuing here, he says, the prime effort of Vatican policy, therefore, must always be directed to warding off every trend towards assumption of power by the masses of the common people and resisting every trace of leftism in economic and social matters. On September the 6th, 1936, a pastoral letter of Count von Preising, Bishop of Berlin, was read in all churches of his diocese, in which it was stated that the Pope had issued an ultimatum that any and every connection or contact with the leftist currents is forbidden and must be most strenuously fought by the Church, and that came from the Pope. For the attainment of the Catholic Church's unchanging goal can be reached only by the aid of authoritarian government, never by the consent of democratic regimes. Furthermore, the papacy must make it its business to extend this policy to all countries of Christendom, to all parts of the Protestant British Empire, the United States, and the Orthodox Slavic and Russian countries, as well as the so-called Catholic countries of the world, including South America. And it's interesting that every one of those countries was white. He doesn't include Africa or China in that. And it's the countries of Christendom. Yeah. Obviously, he includes South America, where they're all full of mixed people there now, but it wasn't quite so bad back then in 1936. But that's the Pope.
Not at all.
Saying that all leftist currents are forbidden. I mean, that's the total opposite of what the Church is today, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, another thing about democracy as well is what it actually means is that the masses are always right, you know, the majority, which is, you know, is not the case. You know, if there's one in a room that's got a true, you know, fact of something, and 20 have a different view, then, you know, that don't mean it's right.
It's mob rule, isn't it?
Totally, yeah. But I think it's also the fact that they connive behind these so-called politicians in the book Tragedy and Hope by Quigley, who was Clinton's mentor. He actually says exactly what it is. He says that nothing ever changes. And these left and rights may differ on minor points, but on the whole, the agenda stays the same. Politicians like Clinton and Bush and all the others, but the agenda's still the same. And that's what it is. Gone.
99 people voting yes when 99 people are actually wrong, and there's only one person voting no and he's actually right, doesn't make those 99 people right. This is the thing. And the very elite, the people that are qualified in technical matters and technical subjects such as ruling the people, are always going to be a very, very tiny percentage. And the majority of people are going to be unqualified, not know what they're talking about, not know the details of what's going on, And the very worst people put an important decision like ruling the people in their hands. That's why it was always a king.
Well, it's a bit like putting it in the hands of these millions of people who watch Coronation, but, you know, on the dot every week. You know, they don't know anything about politics, they're not interested in politics, and yet they've got to say, which is ridiculous.
So basically, just
sorry if
I just it just benefits the bankers, doesn't it? It benefits the oligarchs to have it this way, because then they can just manipulate the people by controlling the media, which is how it works. But even if we didn't have them manipulating it, it still wouldn't produce anything good, because it would be uneducated, unqualified people deciding on things. So you still wouldn't get the right decisions made.
Exactly.
Well, let's have a look at the actual term, the Holy Reich, because there's some really fascinating stuff here. Why the Third Reich actually took form and how it wasn't Hitler's idea. It was the Pope's idea. The unchanging goal of the Catholic Church is the restoration of its status as the only legally recognized church in Christendom. To attain it, liberal democratic constitutions must be continuously opposed and a type of civil government eventually established in all countries that will extend protection only to the Roman Catholic Church. This protection was secured in Spain, for example, after Franco's fascist rebellion had destroyed the Spanish Republic in 1938. Franco's concordat with the Vatican, signed on June 6, 1941, reaffirmed the four articles of the Concordat of 1851, the first of which reads, "The Roman Catholic religion, to the exclusion of any other, continues to be the sole religion of the Spanish nation." And I've got another quote here about it. Pope Pius XI had reason in a speech in February 1929 to call Mussolini a gift of providence, a man free from the prejudices of the politicians of the liberal school. After Italy signed a concordat, but it was the concordat with Germany that really fulfilled the church's objectives. So these fascist states that were being formed, the church was hoping to use them to unite the church again under one church rather than the heresy of Protestantism. And it does look like, you know, Hitler was wanting to do this as well.
He was, yeah. I mean, he failed with the Protestant church. He gave up on at one point. But what people don't realise is that not only is the Concordat in Germany skipped over and is absolutely important to World War II, but we were never told about these other Concordats signed by Spain, by Italy, by Belgium, all these other Christian countries in Europe, which were all forming together as a wall against Bolshevism. So this kind of blows the pagan myth apart, because when Hitler's doing his Concordat in line with everybody else, it's one unit, it's one Christian unit. And so, you know, someone could say, oh, Hitler didn't really mean it in his speeches, he had to say that, otherwise he wouldn't get in. Well, the only reason he got in was because the centre church was abolished. And the Roman Catholic Church kind of installed him, or insisted that the Catholics install him. And so, you know, and then, of course, you know, what about the other guys, Franco and Belgium, and the country of Belgium, and Mussolini? Were they pretending to be pagans as well? Well, they're not. No, these were Christians. These were fascists, and they all had an agenda. All the Roman Empire.
Yeah, they were all helped by the Catholic Church, as you were saying there. If it wasn't for the Catholic Church saying, get rid of that centre party, Hitler wouldn't have given the power. Well, as I say, let's have a look at the actual terminology, the Reich, and what it was. The following are the Kaiser's own words. "It was of interest to me that the Pope said to me on this occasion that Germany must become the sword of the Catholic Church. I remarked that the old Roman Empire of the German nation no longer existed and that conditions had changed, but he stuck to his words." So that shows you how back this idea was in the Pope's mind, that Germany needed to become the sword of the Catholic Church and reform the Reich. And these were also Hitler's avowed objectives, testified to in America by none other than the Jesuit Edmund Walsh, director of the Jesuit School of Diplomacy in Washington, D.C. The New York Times of February 17, 1940, reported the following statement of his in a public speech in the nation's capital. The German war aims were outlined tonight as a re-establishment of the Holy Roman Empire by Dr. Edmund A. Walsh, regent of the Foreign Service School of Georgetown University. Dr. Walsh said that he had heard Adolf Hitler say that the Holy Roman Empire, which was a German empire, must be re-established. And as late as October 9, 1943, the New York Post reported that the same father, Edmund Walsh, and his co-instructors of the Jesuit School for Foreign Service were teaching U.S. Army classes that a revival of the Holy Roman Empire was the only solution of the German problem. Unless we think this is propaganda, in his book Church and State in Germany, which was widely distributed in America by the German Library of Information, Frederick F. Schrader reproduced the official text of the Vatican Concordat and quoted the conclusion of a review of it from Germania, the most influential Catholic newspaper in Germany, as follows. It was reserved for the constellation of Adolf Hitler, Franz von Papen, and Cardinal Pacelli to renew the old bonds between the Reich and the Church. And Franz von Papen, co-signer with Pope Pius XII of the Vatican's Concordat with Hitler's Reich, summed up the Vatican-Hitler policies as follows in Der Völkische Beobachter of January 14, 1934. He said, "The Third Reich is the first power which not only recognizes, but puts into practice the high principles of the papacy." So this Third Reich is not just wording that Germany's enemies use to describe them. This was a long-term plan that was formed in the time of the Kaiser. And it was just finally getting fruition. Yeah, and it's just getting fruition there. And it's interesting that say that...
It was significant that he signed the Concordat within weeks of coming to power. I've stated this before. It must have all been planned before. How quick it all moved.
And the Concordat said to renew the old bonds between the Reich and the Church. And it says they were putting into practice the high principles of the papacy. And what were the principles of the Catholic Church? The principles were to keep the Jews separate from the Christians.
Anti-Semitic.
and we hear E. Michael Jones talk about it. Sicut Judaeus non. The Christian doesn't have the right to harm the Jew, and the Jew does not have the right to degenerate the Christian society. And he does not have the right to engage in usury. He does not have the right to subvert society with pornography. And in the same, the Christian does not have the right to burn down his synagogues. And the Catholic Church said that the Jews had to wear a uniform so that people had to know that they were Jews, so that they could beware of not being hoodwinked by them. And the Jews had to live separately. They had to live in their ghettos. And this is basically what Hitler was doing. He was kept them separate. He said, no, you can't be a part of civil society. You can't be teaching children in schools. You can't be a part of the government. You can't be a part of the banks. And that was Catholic
making
policy.
Movies, yeah.
Yeah, Catholic policy that Hitler was instituting. It was just that it hadn't been seen for 200 years or longer.
And it's never spoke about. And it's got to be for a reason. And probably because of the reason why I say that that holy war ended and nobody actually knew it was a holy war. And so, the genocide continues.
I mean, it should be a clue when they're called the Third Reich, but I think most people don't understand what a Reich is nowadays. They don't realise that it was
a
Holy Reich.
I think it was a Holy Roman Empire, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, they cover that up. I think most people just think, that just means the Roman Empire.
But yeah.
It's a Christian empire. I mean, I can remember reading a very old Bible, and it, in the book of Revelations, it talks about the Reich, and it's talking about the reign of Christ, and it calls it the Reich. It's a term it's a Christian term. It's Christian terminology. But when people think of it now, they think of it as just to do with National Socialism. But again, are these high principles of the papacy... Jews not being able to marry Christians, that was a law that was brought in by the Catholic Church, and I think in about the 5th century, as a very old law. And that's the Nuremberg race laws.
Couldn't have servants, couldn't have under a certain age, you know.
Jews couldn't marry Christians.
All to protect Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, the origins of so much of the National Socialist policy is in Christianity, and particularly in the Catholic Church. If you look at what the Catholic Church was fighting against, Freemasonry and Jews, and I think a lot of people just look at the church today and just wouldn't cross their mind that this organisation was actually pitted against the Jews.
Demonised.
And the Masons.
Yeah, I mean, they got, since World War II at least, they've gone to tearing up with the paedophilia and certain, you know, people now look at the Catholic Church as degenerate, which it is, but they think it's always been like that, which it hasn't. But, you know, it takes some convincing.
I mean, this was the final battle, wasn't it, really?
This was the final battle.
And they wanted to push out all the liberal, the communist, Freemasons that were actually within the church and cleanse the church. And at the same time, they wanted to clean them out from society and build a new Reich.
Weapon. Yeah.
And let's have a look at some of the methods that they had for doing this. Americans noted that the Pope and Mussolini exchanged heated words over the methods by which they had agreed to work together according to the terms of the Lateran Pact they had jointly signed in 1929. They noted that Hitler's regime, in the beginning, interned individual anti-Nazi Catholic priests in concentration camps, that the heads of some religious orders in Germany and Austria were brought to trial before the People's Court for smuggling money out of the country, that others were arrested and found guilty of crimes against morals, that some priests were jailed for harbouring communists in Germany, that Hitler seemed to turn against his best supporters among the Catholic hierarchy, notably Cardinal Innitzer and the Bishop of Salzburg, both of whom had signed the manifesto of the Catholic hierarchy, welcoming Hitler into Austria at the time of the Anschluss, that public school education was taken out of the hands of the priests in Austria, that the Catholic Centre Party had suffered and its leader, Dr. Klausner, was assassinated in Hitler's blood purge of June 30th, 1934. All these facts were erroneously confused in America with what was called Hitler's fight against the churches. So every one of those was part of cleansing the church from the liberal elements, because a lot of them get used by the pagans today to say, oh no, Hitler was fighting against the church because he did this. Because he removed Cardinal Innitzer and the Bishop of Salzburg, because he took the teaching out of the hands of the Catholic center, out of the hands of the Catholics in Austria. But it was taken out of the hands of the communist branch.
This all stems from not knowing about the Holy Roman Empire, because it just does look like it's purging.
Well, and these purges have gone on since the beginning of the church as well, apparently. The outstanding German Catholic historian Father Joseph Schmidlin, professor at Tübingen University, gives a clear picture of the fight between the two factions in the church for the mastery of Vatican policy towards the end of the 19th century. In his History of the Popes of Modern Times, Volume 3, page 1, he tells us, "The history of the popes during the 19th century presents a succession of divergent systems following each other like a game of opposites, and of warring forces striving for the mastery, with first one side winning and then another. On one side are the zealots, striving in an intransigent and intolerant manner to preserve fixed traditions and orthodoxy, and who take a hostile attitude towards the progress of modern civilization and the liberal victories that followed on the great revolutions, which are the unremitting enemies of the Catholic Church, the state, and the principle of authority. On the other side are the liberals, who, deluded by what seemed to be a more equitable political sense, endeavoured to break free from the traditional restraints bound up with the ideas of old, and who tried to reconcile themselves with modern progress in order to live in what they thought would be peace with the liberal states and governments, and to integrate the church into them as a neutered spiritual force in contemporary civilization." And we can see where that got them today, with women priests, gay vicars, transsexual baptisms, and paedophile scandals in the church. and I altered that last little bit somewhat. But you can see that this author was obviously on the side of the communists, and he thought that the French Revolution and the Bolshevik Revolution and the Glorious Revolution,
bringing liberty. Yeah,
and Cromwell, he thought these were all fantastic things, bringing us liberty. And then just look at where it's got us today. Look at the minority that white people are now in the world. And look at all the race mixing that's going on, all the homosexuality. Our countries are being flooded with Muslims.
Forced, yeah.
The loss of the importance of the church and Christianity. These people claim to be Christians, but what would they think of it today? With atheism being taught in schools, evolution being taught in schools, communism everywhere.
Homosexuality taught in schools.
Yeah. Did you hear what the church's response? This week they've had last week rather, they had a big get together to talk about the pedophile child abuse scandal in the church and what they were going to do about it. And this was brought on by the fact that the news came out that at least 90% of all the victims were over the age of 14 and they were all male. So they weren't children. They were young adult males, which means that the priests were homosexuals, not pedophiles. So what was the church's response to this? They've said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to redefine what the word minor means so that it means over the age of 14. So it means they can still continue to call the priests pedophiles even when they're not, they're homosexuals, because they don't want people to realise that it's actually a homosexual scandal in the church. And that shows you how much power they have, doesn't it?
Shows you they've got all the power. And this, obviously, what you just read out then, the outcome of all this, is the complete opposite of what positive Christianity was. Because I said last week, it wasn't a totally German idea. It was going on, trying to protect Europe after World War One with various countries aligned. And Hitler just carried it on and the Germans loved the idea. But the thing is that, this is the total opposite of it. All these, and gay vicars, homosexuals, the transsexualism, paedophiles, all that is the opposite to what Hitler was fighting for.
Well, it's very important to get the Christian teaching right. It's just as important as to remove these people from the church that were subverting it. They actually had to cleanse the teachings of the church as well. Because just like today, when they say, it's perfectly fine to have celebrations of transsexuals in the church, and we love the sinner and not the sin, so it's okay to have sodomites in the church. And the seeds of all that were going on back then, because they will twist teachings today to try and say that we should be loving Muslims and bringing them into our country. So all of that needed cleansing from the teachings. And that's what positive Christianity was about, specifically about de-Judaizing the church. I mean, the actual word Judaizing is the oldest heresy that there is. That goes right back to the times of the apostles. And there were allegations of people Judaizing Christianity, where they were trying to bring in Jewish ideas, trying to get people to think that Christianity was Jewish, trying to subvert it. And is obvious. That's still going on today. I mean, pagans are the biggest Judaizers that there are today.
They remind me of it every day, saying that it's a Jewish religion that I'm following.
Yeah, that's Judaizing. That was the earliest heresy was doing that, and positive Christianity was about removing that, removing all of that, removing all Jewish influence from Christianity. So get rid of
and all the changes what they made in the translations as well, which throws everybody off.
Yeah, well, people don't understand that either. I mean, the King James Version is a very good version. I'd say it's probably the best version that you can get, the original King James Version. But even that's got lots of mistakes in it, because even that, they went to Jewish rabbis and asked them to help them translate it, which is like going to the devil and saying, can you help me translate the Bible? So this is why you got things like the word Jew in there, rather than three different words for the word, three different words.
Which is why I wanted to do that video, to be honest, because, you know, I was trying an attempt to at least clear some things up, which we know is fact, which can help people, they understand it.
Gentile is another one. Gentile is a really good example of how they've twisted the words in the Bible, because the word Gentile, it means nation. It doesn't mean an individual. You can't have an individual Gentile. You can't say, I'm a Gentile, because the word means nation. So when it's talking about nations in the New Testament, it's either talking about the nations that were promised to Abraham, meaning the nations descended from Jacob, Israel, European nations, basically. The church will say that's a spiritual thing, but that's what it means when it's talking about Gentiles. It's talking about the nations that were descended from Abraham. Or it could be talking about the other nations, but it's certainly not talking about individuals, and it certainly doesn't mean non-Jew, because right the way through it's talking about these nations, the nations of Israel. And the old word for it, because Gentile is Latin, the Hebrew word was goy. And all the promises in the Old Testament that are made to Isaac and Jacob and all the descendants of Abraham, those promises are made to the goy of Israel. And today, the Jews tell us, oh, goyim means non-Jew. And God actually addressed Israel as goyim, as goy. And that word itself, Latinized, became Gentile, which meant nations. It always meant nations. So that is totally twisted today, completely twisted. And I think that's a really important one, actually, because it...
For sure, yeah.
Because it shows you that these promises in the New Testament were to exactly the same people as the promises were made in the Old Testament.
Well, the experts are doing it because, according to Benjamin Freedom, anti-Semitism, actually, he says, is a smokescreen for communism. You know, they do pinch these words and then claim it for their own and then use it for their own means.
Anti-Semitism, again.
Semitic is an Arab.
Well, yeah, when you think about it, anti-Semitism is a nonsense word. If Semite means Jew, if Semite means Jew or Arab, then you could be anti-Semites, meaning you're anti-Jews or Arabs, and therefore Semitism has to be an activity that Jews or Arabs do. So Semitism could be engaging in usury, it could be engaging in pornography, it could be promoting anything deviant, basically. And so that would be Semitism. So then you could say, well, I'm anti-Semitism, meaning I'm anti-usury, I'm against pornography, I'm against open borders, and yet it doesn't mean that, does it?
Suddenly now you've got to agree with it.
Yeah, it doesn't.
You've
got
to agree with it all.
What it means is being anti the activities of Jews. It doesn't mean being anti-Jews themselves, but that's what they've made it mean. So it's a nonsense word. It's not grammatically correct. I was just thinking about that one the other day. You can say, well, I'm countering Semitism. That's what we're doing here. We are countering Semitism. But it doesn't mean we hate Jews. It just means we are countering the activities of Jews.
Yeah, so maybe that's the better one to use. Because these laws are gone for a reason.
Countering Semitism. Well, I've got another quote here. The American public did not see that Hitler, in persecuting and eliminating the anti-fascist elements of the Roman Catholic Church, was acting parallel with and aiding and abetting the traditional element within the church that wished to bring about the same result. Brutal cleansing of liberal and heretical members within the Catholic Church itself has always preceded every return to authoritarianism in Europe. The Crusades of the Middle Ages began with persecutions of the Jews and a purging of Catholic heretical members of the Church. The same happened at the beginning of the Wars of Religion, instigated by the Jesuits in the 17th century. National Socialism's anti-Semitic ideology, its anti-Masonic and anti-democratic activities, its very propaganda methods, were borrowed from the Jesuit order. As in Inquisition times, the Catholic Church merely used the Ovra and Gestapo of the fascist and Nazi regimes as its secular arm to rid Catholicism of its own recalcitrant elements, which had become infected with liberal and Protestant ideas during the post-war years. On the other hand, fascism and National Socialism provided the Catholic Church with a new weapon to bring to a successful conclusion its 400-year war against Protestantism and the liberal institutions it had brought into being in the social order, and which had been allowed greater scope than ever to extend its hated heresy since the fall of the German monarchy in 1918. It's interesting, it says there about the Crusades of the Middle Ages, beginning with the persecution of the Jews and a purging of Catholic heretical members of the church. That must have been these Gnostic sects that they had. Yeah, the Templars and the Bogomils. And they did. They got rid of these heretical groups. Where were they? They were in France, in a part of France called the Languedoc. That's it, called the Languedoc. Mm. And I think it ties in with stuff to do with the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail and Dan Brown's stuff and these Gnostic Christians. And people today will say, oh, yes, well, the Catholic Church was terrible. It got rid of all these, got rid of all these other Christian sects. But what they were doing, even back then, they were getting rid of the liberal types, the communist types, Freemasonic types.
Yeah, because we'd end up like we are today.
Yeah.
Or sooner.
Yeah, exactly. It's been the same enemy all along. And that's what the church has been fighting against. And this just confirms, all that you've been saying in the recent documentary, really, Dennis, this author here, even though he's not on our side.
Well, that's the best way to get information, is these people who have dwelled into all this and have a hatred for Germany and the Catholic Church, they presented this all to me, on a plate.
I think we've got
supposed to be disgusted by it all.
Hmm. He does appear to make out that the Jesuits are, supremely traditional. And E. Michael Jones says that it's the Jesuits that are responsible for the homo mafia that are in the church now. That is all.
Oh, definitely now. Pushed by Jesuits altogether. Because he's one, isn't he? Pope Francis.
So 100 years ago. So either the Jesuits have changed over the last 100 years, or this author was blaming Jesuits when really it was the traditionalists in the church, and the Jesuits were just doing what the traditionalists were telling them to. I'm not sure.
Well, I think that's the case. I think they were ultra protective of the church. They were to Protestantism and bring down the reforms, Reformation. To me, it was like a 180-degree turn for me on the Jesuits, because I always believed, as Michael Jones said, that they were, a bad thing for the church. But in reality, they were actually, I think, a good thing, because whatever they did was for our benefit long term.
I know that when the Jesuits were supposed to have been very, very anti-Jewish, and that's what this author is alleging, that they were very much against Jews. And Ignatius Loyola, he was a converso Jew. So, and maybe some of these converso Jews, they were really zealous. Friedman. Maybe they were extremely zealous to change the actual Jews, and maybe part of doing that, they were even more zealous than the Christians were in actually going after the Jews.
Quite possible.
Okay. Yeah. And you can believe that.
I tend to think that they knew the end agenda. So that's, I think, once they decided to break away from that and inform everybody, I think that's a big part as well, because they knew what they were aiming for.
There was another Jew called Pfefferkorn. And he really fought hard to get the Talmud burned. And he was up against Cardinal Richelieu, or Richelieu. And this cardinal was saying, oh, no, we need this Talmud. It will help us to translate the Old Testament and these learned Jews. This is such a wonderful book. And this Pfefferkorn, this converso Jew, is saying, no, this is dreadful. You need to burn this. You need to get rid of it. And unfortunately, they listened to this Reuchlin instead, rather than listening to Pfefferkorn. He was a converso. So we have had so-called good Jews in history.
We out them, would be totally in the dark in some cases.
But they do serve a general purpose that's good for all the rest of the Jews, because it makes you think, well, they're not all bad. Maybe they can be converted. Maybe they can be made to change their ways. Think so, yeah, he does seem to think so. But I think history tells us differently. I think we get the odd one. You do get the odd one, but just because you get the odd one, that's an exception to the rule. And it doesn't mean that the rule doesn't exist. It just means that they're an exception to the rule. They help prove that.
I just wonder sometimes what we'd know now if Benjamin Friedman hadn't released all the information. You know, certainly it's certainly a big chunk of history that we wouldn't have known about.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? This Catholic side of it, that really isn't known by very many people. I mean, Bishop Williamson wasn't aware of
for
it.
For a reason.
I don't think E. Michael Jones is aware of this stuff.
No.
And it's really the first time that it's come out. So we've got to thank you for that, Dennis, obviously. And thank you very much for coming on today. Indeed. It's time we've finished. We've got to the end. Thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners.
No problem.
For listening. We'll be back next week with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
Tuned in to